Well, let's wrap up Psalm 135. And we're going to wrap it up. I'm going to go back again to kind of re-remind us where we are, the setting of the stage. Many of the Psalms that we have studied, in particular the last few Psalms, and also the one that we are going to delve into, all remind the worshiper and the reader about the distinction of who God is, and that there is a great distinction between God and all the idols of mankind, that the idols are absurd. To worship an idol is absurd simply because you either make the idol literally, or the idol becomes your God based upon what you conceive a God to be. So both are absurd. And I just want to go back to verses 15 through 18 and then go back to a little bit of what we studied last week about that kind of a reminder, re-reminder. The idols of the heathens are silver and gold, the works of men's hands. They have mouths, but they speak not, eyes have they, but they see not. They have ears, but they hear not, neither is there any breath in their mouths. They that make them are like unto them, so is everyone that trusteth in them. The idol is vain, and so is one's trust in him. It is the worshiper becomes as vain as the idol simply because the idol is created by the person. And it is absurd for a person to bow down and worship an idol which he created. It doesn't make any sense. He becomes as vain as the idol itself. It doesn't make any sense to worship an idol. And there was and is plenty of it. I mean, we even have a program called American Idol. I mean, they're not even being subtle about it. They're telling you this is what we want you to do. This is another god, another music god, another music goddess. I was reading something that William H. Buckley Jr. had passed today. And undoubtedly, he is or was the father of conservatism as we know it in modern circles today. And there were a few very conservative people today who frankly owe their existence to William H. Buckley. And one thing that Rush Limbaugh had written, which I thought was an abomination, I understood what he said, but it goes to the point again of this whole issue of idolatry. He said that he was invited to National Review magazine and that he had got a chance to be a part of writing. I think the editors wanted him to write something. He got a chance to meet William H. Buckley Jr. And he said that his whole attitude was that as far as he was concerned, meeting William H. Buckley Jr. was as close to meeting a god on this planet. He worshiped this man. And there are many people who have these insane notions that they can elevate these men way above anything. He's just a man. He was a brilliant man. No, I don't think anyone's going to question the man's brilliance. But he was a man. That's the point. I'm not knocking anything that he said or did. He was a human being. He wasn't as close to a god as you're going to get on earth. He had said he thought he had seen the face of God. I doubt that. I don't think God looks like William H. Buckley Jr. I don't think God sounds like William H. Buckley Jr. I don't get that impression. And I'm being very kind about that. But this is not surprising, I guess. I just thought, wow, that's kind of odd that this man would have such a reverence for his mentor that he thought he was worshiping. He was approaching a god, as close to a god as you can get on earth. I get close to God every day, and that is through Christ. And I'm talking the real God, not a god like on earth. When we go before the Lord, we are bowing in the presence of God right now, whose presence fills the heavens and the earth. So just again, this whole notion of idolatry is not something that happened in the olden days. It's happening throughout all of human history. Thought I'd just let you know that. And we clearly saw that these four verses are exactly the same verses that are in Psalm 115, verses 4 through 8. And so instead of reinventing the wheel, we just went back and pretty much review what we've already studied there. And I was just, again, enamored by Spurgeon's quotation in regards to this whole issue of idolatry. We talked about the fact that, you know, some of the idols were quite elaborate, gold and silver, of course, and they were carved and they were beautiful. We're going to see in a moment in Isaiah 44 how a man burned a log, and then from the ashes he made an idol out of the ashes. So it's, you know, when you try to attach sense to idolatry, nothing really makes sense. I was looked on, I don't know what. You don't have to look far to see the insanity that goes on in your life, in this world. You just have to make sure you hold very close to the Lord so you don't lose your own. But someone had showed a picture of a pretzel that supposedly bore the image, I think, of the Pope, of pretzel. And they called me crazy and a host of other things just for teaching the Bible. I'll be a blithering lunatic rather than being these folks who pay homage to pretzels and potato chips that look like the Virgin Mary and English muffins and tortillas and cereal. There was one where I think it was either a sugar frosted flake or cornflake. The food images are just, and they sell on eBay for astronomically amounts of money. Light shadows, window reflections, you name it, it's out there. And people hoarding by the window and praying to the window. And people don't think that's idolatry. And of course, the lapdog, ignorant news media just laps it up and shows it as if there's something fantastic. It's just astonishing to me. It really is. But idolatry is everywhere. So some are quite elaborate. In our age, many are quite absurd. You know, the bow before potato chips and pretzels and what have you is quite crazy. And charging people to come and look at it and to touch it to get a blessing is, that's what people do. And they'll do it. But I'm crazy. I'm the crazy person. Because I just stand and teach the Bible. Like I said, I'd be a complete blithering lunatic, if that's what it takes. But most people couldn't afford silver and gold. And so they made the idol or worshiped whatever they could, whether it be wood, a rock, whatever. And the purpose, again, as we said last time, of the contrast that is made in Psalm 135, Psalm 115, Psalm 90, well, let's see, I'll get to it probably the next Psalm, because it's everywhere, Psalm 97, Psalm 95, Psalm 96, over and over and over again, Psalm 136, over and over again. The contrast is to show the utter vanity of trusting in such idols and to lead the people of Israel to put their trust in God. I'm going to quote Spurgeon again, because we need to just be reminded of this. Their idols are silver and gold, mere dead inert matter. At the best, only made of precious metal, but that metal quite as powerless as the commonest wood or clay. It didn't matter whether it was the most expensive metal or the most cheapest patch of dirt. They're all primarily inert. They're dead matter. The value of the idol shows the folly of the maker in wasting his substance, but certainly does not increase the power of the image, since there is no more life in silver and gold than in brass or iron. It doesn't matter whether it's aluminum, brass, iron, copper, or gold, or silver, or platinum. There's no life, so it doesn't matter. The value of it, the more elaborate expenses given to making a more expensive idol is even more absurd, because it's still no better than the cheapest metal you could find. wouldn't make any sense to bow before some big gigantic idol as it would to bow before a Coca-Cola can you find the street. At least the can has value if you cash it in. How irrational that men should adore that which is less than themselves. I mean, God made a man in his own image. He certainly didn't make other matters of the creation to be more than a man, of more value than a man. I mean, man is the only redeemable creature. He's the only one who has been given a redemptive door. The Lord didn't die for animals, your house, the trees, or anything else. I'm sorry, Fluffy is not in heaven. If you think Fluffy is, you're an idiot. You can't even prove it. You can't find him there. There's no need to even go through that exercise. Let me move on. Man is the only redeemable person, the only redeemable part of creation. I know Earth will be a new Earth, but Christ died for people. He didn't die for planets, because they're going to be done away with anyway, and it's going to be made new. So to worship an idol is ridiculous. That it's without ration or rationale that a man should adore that which is less than himself. How strange that a man should think that he can make a god. Can madness go further? Well, I don't know. I think Spurgeon might have a different question. He might actually answer his question if he was watching TBN back in the 80s and saw Paul and Jan and Kenneth and Gloria Copeland call themselves a god. I think he would probably say, yes, it can go further. It has. We may make an application of all this to the times in which we are now living. The god of modern thought is the creation of the thinker himself, evolved out of his own consciousness, or fashioned according to his own notion of what a god should be. So that opens the door wide to any kind of idolatry, to any kind of idol. But it begins in the mind, which we, again, reviewed last time. Now, when it is evident that such a being is no god, it is impossible that there should be a god at all except the god of revelation. A god who can be fashioned by our own thoughts is no more a god than the image manufactured or produced by our own hands. It's ridiculous to think that what we conceive in the mind is any more a god than whatever it is we carve out of the thoughts of our mind being a god. It's ridiculous. It's absolutely absurd. Idols are made and trusted in as an open rebellion against the true and living God. That's the key. Everyone worshiping an idol declares publicly that they are not worshiping the true and living God, which is pretty much Romans 1. You know, if you ignore and suppress the truth of the true and living God, then you open yourself up to the worship of bats and birds and creeping things and bugs and beetles and animals and people and what have you. So you worship God or you worship idols, you're going to worship something. And it's all a sign of open rebellion against God. It's just unbelief. It is an excuse to claim a belief in some deity, yet to maintain one's continued covetous behavior. Behind all idolatry is covetousness. Israel forsook God to worship idols, to do and to live as the people of the land did and lived. That's what they did. Do you think the people of the land who were worshiping idols were serving God faithfully and righteously? No. And that was attractive to Israel. So they willingly forsook the rock that delivered them, and they began to worship idols. Because in their alleged worship of idols, they automatically dismiss submission and obedience to the true living God, and they began to live like and worse than the people of the land. That's why you had these constant striking downs of God and constant captivity of the nation of Israel, and that's why there are very few of them today. And it's going to be a lot fewer during the tribulation period, for the ultimate blasphemy that they make a league with the Antichrist and with the beast. God is not finished dealing with idolatry with Israel. So this is behind all the idolatry, whatever it is, regardless what it is or who it is a deity that allows one to continue, is a deity to the person that is, that allows one person to, or a person to continue to indulge in their covetous. It's the religion of the world. Multitudes, even in the churches, are doing it. Where they worship their pastors, where they worship other people, where they worship some singer or some song. There's a very thin line between respect and worship. The line is extremely thin. And I think some people go to either one extreme or the other. Either they worship their whatever in the church, or they just ignore. And both extremes are wrong. Because the key is, if you worship God, every other relationship takes care of itself. It's a simple equation. There's no imbalance once a person understands who God is. Once a person knows and worships God, they have every right focus on the relationship, because right here in this Bible, it tells us exactly how to behave towards each other. So there's no ambiguity about that. It's just a question, do we want to actually believe what God said? It is not the object of idolatry that is key. That is what the idol was made of. That's not the key. It is the reason why people are idolaters. That's the issue. And they are idolaters because they have forsaken the true and living God. They simply do not believe the true and living God to be the true and living God, no matter what their mouths are saying. I'm not interested in what people are saying. Yeah, you know, we were kind of joking about the political stuff tonight. We were talking about I will never vote for a certain candidate, certain black candidate. And Alex said, "Well, you might get all." And I think you were talking about getting hypnotized. Ain't that much hypno or ties in my mind? Okay, because I look at what the man's record is, and I know he's worse than a woman he's gonna get the beat down to next week. So, you look at what the man actually wrote, what he stands for. You don't ignore that. I mean, I don't get caught up in awe because I don't get caught up in worship of another person. You know, so I think the man's quite boring, frankly. You know, I listened to a few of the speeches. It really helped me, you know, get that nod going before you go to bed. It was almost like a no, well, like a, not a no-dose, but a doze-doze, frankly. Like chamomile. Like an extra dose of sleepy time. Turn it off. It's getting tired. You better record it and use it when I have a sleepless night. Just watch them. Just start doing the head bob, you know. Just knock it all back. The idols have mouths. The elaborate ones, that is. The ones that people put a lot of money and things into that they wanted to look as best they can. And much of the idols of the lands like Egypt and all these other lands had, and Rome and Greece and on, Corinth, many of these places just filled with idolatry. And it's still, some of them still exist today. And people pay money to go on jet planes from across the world to see an idol. You say that doesn't make, of course it doesn't make any sense. We're not dealing with sins. We're dealing with idolatry. I want to travel to Europe so I can see the statue of this and see the ruins of that. Okay. And now what? Get back home? You got your little photographs, your little memories. Why did you just want to see them? The internet's broke down or something? They don't have encyclopedias? If it was just an issue of seeing something, you could have easily saw it. I mean, there's got to be motive behind that. I don't know. What do I know anyway? They have mouths, but they speak not. Eyes they have, but they see not. They have ears, but they hear not. Noses have they, but they smell not. They have hands, but they handle not. Feet have they, but they walk not. Neither speak they through their throat. They have everything that looks just like a living creature, but it's not living, and it never will live. And yet people will bow down before that and ask it to prevent them. It's like you see many of these dashboards, and they have, those are idols, either dangling from the mirror or ruin a nice new car's dashboard by gluing some fake whatever, an idol on a dashboard. They have mouths, but they speak not. Eyes have they, especially the good ones, But I don't think, you know, if you're going to have an idol, you don't want to get the $1.50 idol. You want to get one to really show you devoted to your idolatry. So you get the one with some craftsman really took the time to put eyes, you know, paint some eyes. Maybe even a good craftsman with a jeweler's tool could put pupils in there, make it look really real, and have, you know, well, they do stuff like that. Some of these tourists come out looking like people. You look like a person. So that you're not going to do it religiously. They're going to get down. They cut, put wrinkles in the face, face line, dimples, whatnot, hair, paint the hair, and you got that idol of whatever material stuck on your dashboard, and you think that that's going to keep you from an accident or protect you from whatever. And there are millions and millions of people in this world, billions of people in this world that do that every day. It's on their dashboards. It's on their coffee table. What do you think all these candles is? Why do you think people light candles? It's because of idolatry. They're praying to candles. We light a candle because, we light candles because we want to pray. Why don't you just pray? Why do you have to have a candle? It's more to the candle than just prayer. They got those pictures of the patron saint of I'm deceived on the candles. And people buy those candles. It's big business. Idolatry is big business. It's called the Roman Catholic Church. And frankly, I think in all fairness, you got to be fair about the whole deal. You just can't blanket one denomination and say, you know, non-Protestantism is involved in our church. There's a bunch of idolatry in Protestant churches too. It certainly is. We act like we can't live without somebody's tape set or someone's praying hands or someone's I love Jesus pins. Don't you think that's idolatry? You mean to tell me you have to have that stuff on to be a witness? I heard one man say with my own ears, of course he made a lot of them, that if you put Jesus first pins on your lapel, that pin will instigate an opportunity for you to give witness to Christ. Now that sounds real good to the person who doesn't think. Because the person doesn't need a pen to talk about Christ. And if you do, you have a problem. Your life and your mouth was given to you by God after he saved both to be a testimony. And if you can't tell people about Christ unless you kickstart a conversation through some deception, you have a deep-seated spiritual problem. And there are many other things, those big head dolls and all this other kind of junk. I remember the time when Christian Discount Book Center sold books. And every conceivable dime I had of any kind of spare change or allocated monies for my library for spiritual matters went to Christian Discount Book Center. And I mean I and we, because I was there before I met her. And when I went, I'd spend 3-4 hours there. My feet were hurting. And I was there. I went through all those aisles. And I had a couple of hand carts. I was buying books. And I wanted to learn about the Lord. You know, all these reference sets, these 18 volumes of this, walk around the store like this, trying to keep bounce from breaking. I was having a good old, I just lay and say, can you just watch these for me? Yeah, they knew me by my first name. Because I just go get sets, and I still have many of those sets I brought many years ago. They're still in my library. And I go there because it was the only place I knew where you can get good books for a good price. And all of a sudden, one day I went there and had this little section off on the left side, big head doll section. I thought that was odd for me because I'm thinking we don't need this. This is already everywhere. This is enough. They can order this junk. They don't need to. What is this nonsense here? Little Bible saying on the big head dolls and And all of a sudden, that section got wider than all the tapes and CDs of all the famous so-and-sos. Then I said, this is a problem. Then the good reference works, and you see a little interjected. All these heretics begin to show up at the bookstore. I went, oh, Houston, we got a problem here. It all started when you guys started forsaking the purpose of the Christian Discount Book Center. And I knew the president of the Christian Discount Book Center, and he knew me too. And it all began to get shorter and shorter, and the big head dolls and the tapes, and then idols of every inconceivable kind and different kinds of trinkets and junk just popped up. Then the heretic books begin to show, references begin to vanish, computer stuff came, and then you go back there, and there was a bunch of how-to books. I'm like, what in the world's happening here? And then the reference works began to be in the first two sections. And all back there was all these versions and perversions of the Bible. Student Bible, Housewife's Bible, heretic Bibles begin to pop up. And that was the last they saw of me. Then next thing I know, it was shut down. It was fitting too. They stood for something many years ago. And I knew people that came from all over Southern California to Christian Discount Book Center in Whittier. And I did. I'd leave work to go to the book center. And that was, when I worked for the gas company, I actually scheduled my route to go there to take my lunch break. I could be in San Clemente at lunch. I was going to be at Christian Discount Book Center with them cards. So I wanted to buy some stuff to learn about the Lord. All this stuff, all this mess. Idols may look like people, but they're not. They put people slap the stuff on their dashboard, have little dolls in their house, and you know, if some poor child should happen to knock over a doll, you think they knocked over a person, the way they respond. It ain't like there's a shortage on big head dolls and idols. Patron saint of accidents. They got patron saints of everything. All lies, all deception. All idolatry. Of course, why does the Catholic Church remove from the Ten Commandments of the injunction against idolatry? Why do they do that? Why do you think they do it? So all these idols may have the appearance of any and every living being, but they can't do nothing on your dashboard, your table. Hang around you. You can have them all. You can have all the paint stains around your neck, like bling, religious bling, saint bling. Why not? Why don't you find some dedicated Roman Catholic or some dedicated professing saint with all kinds of all these idols around their neck? Here's the patron saint of thunder and lightning. And just religious bling. Why not? If you find it, someone do that, let me know. You say you heard it here first. Imagine some person, whole neck full of big head dolls. But this one says this verse here, and this one. Like, oh man, they call me crazy for teaching the Bible. I'm just amazed. They have all the appearance of living beings, but they're not. Verse 8. I say verse 8 is verse 8 really of Psalm 115 or verse 18 of Psalm 135. They that make them are like them. So is everyone that trusteth in them. More worthless than the idols are the ones who created them. For how could a man worship a God that he himself created? The man who creates a God, listen to this, a man who creates a God and then worships the God he himself created, to God is more worthless than the idol he just created. I thought about that. That is a statement of judgment, if there ever was one. Would not common sense dictate that the man who would be more powerful than the God he just created, or better, that he who created the idol is the God of the idol rather than the reverse? So, as I said before, there's always something beyond the idol. And that is the root cause of what people worship or why people worship idols. And that is, again, as I stated earlier, idols are made and trusted in as an open rebellion against the true and living God. It is nothing but unbelief. Sense and logic are gone clean away when idolatry is at the forefront. Sure is. Why would I worship a bug? That doesn't make sense to me. That didn't make sense to me when I was lost. It certainly wouldn't make sense to me now. Why would I worship a cat, a beetle, a frog, a bug, a bear, a dog, a cow, an amoeba, a jellyfish, a toad, a dinosaur, a person, myself? None of that made sense to me. It doesn't make sense. But as Romans 1 points out again, the mind becomes reprobate. Idolatry turns to reprobation. It's one of the steps on the downward plunge to a mindless mind. And I think it's like, I remember when I was in junior high, forget one step. I remember jumping down 12 steps at a time. Just because I could. You know, first it was 4, then I would stand at the top of a flight of stairs and just jump down the whole flight. Just because I could. And then learn to round the corner, bounce off the walls the right way, and just jump down the other 12. That's how it is with idolatry. Except you plunge head first down all those steps. We just keep rolling down them anyway. It blinds a person to their true condition before the true and living God and blinds them from the truth of God. In fact, more tragic than the blindness that comes from idolatry is the blindness that comes from the judgment when people are idolaters. That God would judge a person and give them over to their idolatry, as we saw in Romans 1 and every other sin. Turn to Isaiah 44. God asks the idolater, you dare not fear me? I love God's bluntness. It's like, wait a minute. Are you serious? In our vernacular, are you for real? You won't fear me? Verse 8, Isaiah 44. Fear ye not, neither be afraid. I mean, he's talking to Israel, who should have known better. He says, have not I told you from that time and have declared it? Didn't I tell you I was going to do something and then I did it? Ye are even my witnesses. The very existence of Israel is a witness of God, not idolatry. It is a witness of the power of God. Is there a God beside me? God worked to and through Israel. He's saying, you are witnesses to that reality. Is there a God beside me? Yea, there is no God. What a declaration. God said, is there any God beside me, like me, or compared to me, or equal to me? And he says, no. And he says in the clearest terms possible, yea, there is no God. No God? God says there is no God. That pretty much ends the discussion, does it not? In fact, there's no discussion. It's just a monologue. Is there a God beside me? Yea, there is no God. I know not any. Now, God is omniscient. He knows everything forever, okay? And God says, I don't know of any God, period. Beside me, like me, equal to me, there is no God because I don't know any other God. So that's it. They that make a graven image are all of them what?
Vanity,
foolishness. And their delectable things shall not profit. And they are their own witness. They could see. They are witnesses to the fact that whatever it is they're making isn't of God. Why? They see not, nor know, that they may be ashamed. Who hath formed a god, or a molten, a graven image, that is profitable for nothing? Think of Israel. That's what they did after God's deliverance of them. After God parted a sea and allowed them to walk on dry land, kill all their enemies, did major miracles in their presence, slaying all the firstborn of Egypt, from the lowest pheasant, the lowest animal, all the way to the Pharaoh, got them into or through that dry land and headed them towards the promised land, which would have took them 2 weeks at the most if they were obedient, but they got stupid and died in the wilderness 40 years, most of them anyway. Provided everything they needed, even in judgment, gave them manna for how many years? Pretty much most of the years they were in the wilderness, God fed them with manna. God fed them all the way. Their shoes never wore out. Their feet didn't swell. If you walk a few miles, your feet could swell. I mean, you get the why they tell you to get the best walking and running shoes possible? To keep your feet from swelling. Because they know after a few hours, feet get real big because water and blood falls down there in big feet. And so if you got a good pair of walking shoes, it restricts, it keeps that foot, not so much the insoles, that's a good part too, trust me on that one. But a good set of running shoes, if they're walking shoes, if they're good, they'll have like a cloth insole on the inside that wraps that foot tight to keep that blood from pooling in the bottom of your feet. And it hurts too. I got a pair right in the closet, been there for years. I can't wear them things because it's so tight. When you have no arches, you can't wear something that compresses your foot. It's not very comfortable. Maybe I'll get bold and wear them one day. I'll probably be screaming. But your feet will swell. Now, I don't know. How many of you ever had swollen feet after a walk? See, this, you know what this is. Yeah, you know. Yeah, let's not kid ourselves. You know what it is. But their feet never swell. And their terrain and conditions are far worse than ours. And there was no Nike in the wilderness. Okay? Or Turntex. Or anything else like that. It was all sandals. God gave them everything they need, even in judgment. And then they would turn around and worship idols. Gave them every inch of the promised land he promised them, and they would worship idols. Amazing. He says, behold, all his fellows shall be ashamed, and the workmen, they are of men. Let them all be gathered together. Let them stand up, yet they shall fear, and they shall be ashamed together. The smith with the tongs both worketh in the coals and fashioneth it with hammers and worketh it with the strength of his arms. Yea, he is hungry and his strength faileth. He drinketh no water and is faint. He describes a blacksmith who works and creates an idol, who gives himself over to the dedication of the perfection of making this idol. And he won't even eat or drink and he's exhausted until he makes the idol. I was watching a program some time ago about a samurai sword. You see a beautiful design on samurai swords. All that's hand carved. And I'm going to say this because it's true. That's an idol too. People don't understand that the samurai sword, according to the warrior, is living. It's an idol. And I watched this man. He takes us a piece of metal and he just hammers all this detail under really primitive conditions. And he makes his hones this beautiful, deadly weapon. And according to the samurai code, it's living. It's idolatry. It's just a piece of metal. It's good for what it does. But it doesn't have eyes that see. If it lays on the ground, it isn't going to do anything. It's not going to cut the opponent. You don't tell samurai, go slay. The guy who knows what to do with it comes along and there's your head. Game over. and gets a free sword in the process. The carpenter stretcheth out his rule. He marketh it out with the line. He fitteth it with planes. He marketh it out with the compass, maketh it after the figure of a man, according to the beauty of a man that may remain in the house. So this man is a carpenter. He's a woodworker. And he makes his idol. He can't afford, the metal, so he just chips his out. I've seen beauty. You go up to Monterey, and you see those beautiful carvings. They look great. It's huge carving, wood carving of a polar bear. Or a bear looks big. It's like 6 foot. Things cost thousands of dollars. Man, he did some work on that. And same every time I see it, same place, right there, right before you get to the marina, right before you get to Pacific Grove, it's right there on the right side. And every time he's got these beautiful works, all these idols. People love those things. He said he carves it out, makes it after the figure of a man. He hewn him down cedars and taketh the cypress. He gets the best work, the best wood, and the oak. He doesn't get balsa, plywood, cheap wood. He gets the best wood. He gets cedars. Man, cedar wood was big in biblical times. It was a choice of Solomon, the choice of God too, for that matter. And tabernacle work, and tabernacle and temple building, cedar, and cypress, and oak. Oak is a strong wood. Oak trees, good, strong. That's why the furniture is so expensive. You could find furniture that's made of these woods, you're going to pay for it. Because it'll outlast you and your grandchildren. And they could jump on that furniture. Ain't nothing going to happen to it. This junk they got today, you have, look at the wrong way. You put a glass on the wrong side and bounce it. The whole thing falls down. Mom had a table. I don't know how much she paid for that. I mean, we jumped on it, jumped across when she wanted to spank us. We did everything we could to that table. Ain't nothing happened to that table. And after she called us and beat us around the table, then we all had dinner around the table. Chairs, too, for that man. It was a hard chair. Never lost a leg. Leg didn't wobble like cheap stuff we got today. Pressed wood and the veneer disguise is real. Ain't no wood. Ain't nothing made of wood because you're going to pay for it. Oh, honey, we got ourselves an oak table and chairs for $99. No, you did not. Unless you got it from somebody who didn't know what he had. That's all veneer, and you know it. My desk at my house, I brought it in 1982. How many years is that? 20 what? That's 27, 26, 25 years. 26 years. 26 years. That's a hard desk. It's the first desk I ever brought. And the chair with it. Oh, crazy cheap metal chair. But that desk is as good. I can still smell the fresh wood. Back then it was $350 for that. That was expensive in that day. I wanted a desk that was going to last. And it's lasted. You buy a desk today. Press wood. I used to work with press wood. It looks good. Because you knew nothing different. They got the modular stuff. It's all. Put something heavy on it. Spill something on it. That thing will bubble up. Big old hump right there. Big old bubbly hump right there. You put something hot or cold on that cheap furniture. And it'll be the ring of death right there forever. I've spilled all kinds of stuff on that desk I have. And all I need is a little furniture polish, and you wouldn't know the difference. I didn't want to buy 5 or 6 desks. I wanted to buy one desk forever. That was my mentality back in the day when I guess I had to bring it. Who knows? Verse 14 again. He heweth him down cedars and taketh the cypress and the oak, which he... We're not going to finish the... I thought we were, but it's not going to happen. Nah, we don't. I don't know. Let's see. Strengthened for himself among the trees of the forest. He planteth an ash, and the rain doth nourish it. Then shall it be for a man to burn. If he will take thereof and warm himself, yea... He builds an idol, and then when it gets cold, he uses it for kindling wood. Then shall it be for man to burn. For he will take thereof and warm himself. Yea, he killeth it and baketh bread. Yea, he maketh a god and worship it. He maketh it a graven image and falleth down there too. That's stupid. That's just downright stupid. You make an idol and use them to cook your bread and warm you, and then you bow down before the hump of ashes. And they call me crazy for teaching the Bible and believing that there's a God who's the creator of all things. Yeah, I'll be crazy. He burneth part thereof in the fire, with part thereof he eateth flesh. He roasteth roast, and is satisfied. Yea, he warmeth himself and saith, aha, I am warm. I have seen the fire. And the residue thereof he maketh a god, even his graven image. He falleth down unto it, and worshipeth it, and prayeth unto it, and saith, deliver me, for thou art my God. He takes the wood that he uses to make the idol, and he roasts his roast with it, warms himself up with it, and then the heap of ashes, I've seen the fire. My God provided me fire. Well, you lit it, didn't you? And the residue, the ashes thereof, he maketh a god. He's worshiping the ashes of the idol and gives glory to the idol that the idol helped him. He prays unto it. He falls down unto it. He worships it, prays unto it, and says, deliver me, for thou art my God. See, God is making a case of the utter stupidity of the idolater. That a man would have to have no sense whatsoever to worship an idol. He gives glory to the idol he first created out of wood, and then uses the same idol to cook his food and to warm his body, and then turns around and gives credit for the idol for allowing him to see the fire which he set, and then bows down before the ash heap and then asks the ashes to deliver him. And I'm crazy. Because I believe in Jesus. Yeah, I'm going to be crazy. Stark, raving, mad preacher. They have not known nor understood, for he that hath shut their eyes that they cannot see, and their hearts that they cannot understand. You see that? See the judgment in there? They have not known nor understood. They can't even know. They have no capacity to know intellectually or understand what they're doing. Why? For he has shut their eyes that they cannot see, and their hearts that they cannot understand. That's a judgment of God. And we've seen those two judgments in the New Testament given to multitudes of people who refuse to come all the way up to Christ, given all the evidence that he gave them about himself. Exactly what he did. And he judged them in the same manner. That's why I keep telling people on television and whatever, you know, if God gives you revelation of who he is through the word, you best do something with it, because if not, he'll take that away in judgment. Now, I've seen what God, and you've seen it too. I hope you've seen, and I make that assumption. I speak for myself. I know I've seen what God has done to people's minds. And it is not a pretty thing at all. And each time I think about it, I get a little afraid. Lord, you know, I'm getting old. I'd rather have Alzheimer's than have you snatch my head. At least that the first one is a natural occurrence, and it may or may not happen. You know, if I keep trying to take care of myself, let that move that blood, move that body, do something, get this blood flow and oxygenation, I might survive. I might have my mind. Might be like Miss Rosalie, 98, and she's lucid as ever. God have mercy on me to do that. I may walk like her, you know, like Tim Conway did in Carol Burnett's show, but I want to be able to think. There's one thing I want. If I live to be 100 years old, there's one thing I want. I want a mind and the ability to speak God's truth. If they have to prop me up, put the hands on the pulpit, and just tie me down there, okay, I ain't got to go nowhere. Put the mic on a little higher. Oh, I can't see it? All right, well, I take your word for it. I want my mind. I want my eyes. If I can't see, it doesn't matter. The Braille scares me. I don't want to learn a new language. Okay? I want to see something. I'm just going to tell like it is. I want to see the beauty of something. I don't want to, oh, you know, you look wonderful. They go, no, you know, good thing you can't see. You imagine it's something. No. I want to be able to drive. I want to be able to see things. I want to be able to, you know, I didn't tell anybody, but when I got hit down that racquetball, I thought, you know what, Lord, if I, you know, there's some good out of this because it hit me in the bad eye. You know, this is my good eye right here. This is not a bad eye. It's 2015, it's 2020. It may be different tomorrow because when the swelling goes down, I think all the bad traits will come back. So worst case scenario is 2025, and that's not too bad. Okay, so I guess I'm what, farsighted? It means you can't see things near? However that works. You know, I have to keep getting confirmation about what the... I can read pretty good now. I haven't had the reading glass on since I got hit in the eye. So, well, at least it hit me in the right spot. And they pushed it back in. Who knows? But I was saying, Lord, please don't let me get blind. You know, because and my concern was I just want to be able to see. If I get up, okay, I can deal with the little floater and with the evergreen tree and then the stump and the monsters and all that. I can deal with that. But as long as I could see, everything was fine. And then I had to deal with inflammation. So far, everything's wonderful. Praise be to God. And, of course, to prednisone eye drops. But anyway, everything. Tomorrow I'll know whether I need to take them anymore. But I'm concerned about my eyesight. Because I need to read. Braille is a language I don't want to be bothered with. I don't want to be forced to think about it. I want to have my eyeballs. I got thick glasses now. And you showed up a baseball bat, ain't nobody going to hurt my eyeballs. I'll give me a bloody nose, but they ain't going to give me no eye problems. My teeth might get knocked out, but I'm going to be able to see. I have to have teeth to see, but I got to see something, you know. Yeah, I'm crazy. You doggone right, I'm crazy. But I ain't no idolater. Oh, man. And none considered, verse 19, in his heart, I don't think we're going to finish this chapter, neither is there knowledge nor understanding to say, listen to this, and none considered in his heart, neither is there knowledge nor understanding to say. That's because God judged them, so they don't have any understanding. They can't say in their heart, which is interesting because it speaks to the center of all understanding. They have no understanding, so they can't logically look at this and go, I have burned part of it to fire here. He also, I have baked bread upon the coals thereof. I have roasted flesh and eateth it. And shall I make the residue thereof an abomination? Shall I fall down to the stock of a tree? They can't see the absurdity of building an idol all elaborate with the best wood. And then when the winter comes, you got to use it to eat and to warm yourself. See, cut off an arm, cut off a leg, you know, put them in the fire, roast your roast with it, warm your body up. And then worship the ash, ask it to be your God, and worship and serve it. And God says, when I judge a person, he won't even have the sense to ask the logical question, wait a minute, I just burnt the idol, I cooked with the idol, I cooked bread and meat on the idol, and will I make the ashes an abomination, something to worship? Does that make sense? God said, if I make sure you blind, you want to be able to see that. Shall I fall down to the stock of a tree? But see, you can only see the absurdity of idolatry if God allows you to see it. Because if he doesn't open your eyes, you ain't going to see nothing. It's sense. Are you kidding? What sense is not in your vocabulary? Except nonsense. It can't happen. This is supernatural. Keep telling folks, it's all supernatural. When you look at crazy people, you think of crazy and idolaters, look beyond their craziness, what they're worshiping, look way past and see what God is doing, because he's the one doing it. He's the one withholding their ability to understand the sense of what they're doing, and if he's giving you the sense to see it, learn from it, and fall back on scripture and go, that's what God said will happen. Remember Isaiah 44 said, wait a minute, that's exactly what God said. They can't even see what they're doing. Don't say, how could they be doing that? No, say, they can't see what they're doing because God has closed their eyes and shut off their heart where they can't understand. And then you'll understand. Don't act like you don't understand. Well, they don't know what they're doing. Do you know what they're doing? According to God, this man didn't lay it to heart of the absurdity of his actions. He saw the work of his own hands in that he cut trees and protected himself and cooked food, warned himself, then would he make an idol of that which he by his own hands used to help himself? If the trees were a god, then why did not they provide for the man all of his all that his hands created? Well, if the tree was a god, why did it act like a god? Why didn't it give him what he needed? Shall I now bow down to this lifeless stump of wood, this ash heap? It would have made no sense, but that's idolatry. It is senseless. Verse 20, he feedeth on ashes. A deceived heart had turned him aside, that he cannot deliver his soul, nor say, is there not a lie in my right hand, right in front of my face? Part of the ashes now becomes his god. His heart totally deceived about his true condition and blindness has no capacity to rescue him from his dilemma, nor direct him to say the obvious, that the work of his hands, that is, the idol that he clutches in his right hand, is a lie, a deceit, a falsehood of his own doing. What kind of a god is this? He can't even see. He's clutching the ashes and the remainder of his idol in his hand. He's bowing down to this stuff and worshiping this and asking it to deliver him. And there are people more crazier than that. But it's beyond crazy. It's a judgment of God. It's a judgment of God. Verse 21, remember these, O Jacob and Israel, for thou art my servant. I have formed thee. Thou art my servant, O Israel, that thou shalt not be forgotten of me. Don't you forget me. I made you, and I made you to serve me. You didn't make me, and you certainly didn't bow down, or some idol or some tree made you. I have formed you. You are my servant. Said that twice. You shall not forget me. He made them, and he made them to serve him, not the reverse. And they were not to forget him. Go back to Psalm 35. We'll close up here. See, I made you to serve me. You didn't make a god to serve it, which is senseless. Right back to the whole issue of who's the creator. That's what it's all about. Always points to the Jews being reminded who was their creator over and over and over again. I was looking at an article that someone sent me tonight. I thought, you know, this again just proves that we are woefully lacking in the history of Scripture. And this article came from the Soviet Union, and they were mentioning that they had a very, very, very few books in all of Russia in the church that gave an historical perspective and background on Christianity associated with the Jews in the first century. Well, America, we have plenty of materials. We still don't know that. We can't make the connection at all. That Christianity, for the most part, for quite a while, was a Jewish religion, was a Jewish faith. It wasn't a bunch of heathen Gentiles. But they recognize that without that connection, they have a problem how to approach the Jews in terms of their history and of the scriptures. They have a problem. And if we do not, as a church world today, refocus our so-called exposition on that Old Testament, we too will be ignorant. Because listen, if Israel doesn't matter, take the whole Bible and put it away. If there is, listen, the whole book was written primarily to Jews. Don't you understand that? Who do you think wrote the New Testament, the Old Testament? A bunch of heathens? And how does one remove the influence of Israel from the Bible? That's insanity. Now, you look at how people are treating the Bible today. You think that looking at it as a historical book connected to how God delivered the Jews and how the Jews were the first ones redeemed and how the redeemed Jews were the ones who were sent throughout the world to preach the gospel? No, it's a book today that tells us how wonderful Gentiles are and how God wants to make you the head, not the tail.
You're still the tail.
You're always going to be the tail. Never see it for what it really is. Never make the connection that was written by Jews to Jews, predominantly. And we've thrown them away so we can Gentile the living daylights out of a Bible. Verse 19, bless the Lord, O house of Israel. Bless the Lord, O house of Aaron. Bless the Lord, O house of Levi. Ye that fear the Lord, bless the Lord. Now, we already know that the psalm was written to the temple servants, so it's no surprise that he would address all of them at this end, at the end of the psalm. He called upon the houses of Aaron and Levi, the priestly tribes, and whose houses were responsible for all matters of the worship of God in the temple to bless the Lord. No surprise there. No surprise at all. They were responsible. It's addressed to them, and I think Psalm 136 is addressed to them as well. Because if you connect 2 Chronicles 16, Psalm 105, 106, 107, 118, 136, they all are saying the same thing, more than likely at the point of worship, at the time of worship. And there's no real doubt in my mind at this juncture that it's all referring primarily to these same leaders of the temple worship. See, our understanding of what worship was in the Old Testament is far different than our understanding today of what worship is. Far different. Blessed be the Lord out of Zion, which dwelleth at Jerusalem. Praise ye the Lord. Already seen this blessing of the Lord out of Zion in Psalm 132 and 134. Quickly, just turn to 132, no commentary, verses 13 and 14. For the Lord hath chosen Zion, he hath desired it for his habitation. This is my rest forever. Here will I dwell, for I have desired it. So the Lord out of Zion. There it is. And Psalm 134, verse 3. The Lord that made heaven and earth, bless thee out of Zion. Why? Because his presence there. The God of Zion, the God who made his dwelling in Jerusalem, which is Zion, Mount Zion in Jerusalem, may he be blessed. Amen. And may he bless you. Amen. That was close. Let's pray. Lord, again, thank you for reminding us who you are and reminding us of the absurdity of any idolatry and that there is a thin line, a very thin line between one and another. And it's a lot more idolatry than we can imagine. It's not always what we may think it is, Lord. Great, great subtleties abound in this whole issue between what we know of idols and what we think idols are and that which we dismiss as idolatry. The bottom line for it all is, Lord, if we don't worship you, that's what it is. Whatever it is idolatry. And that be the cause of it. Father, again, thank you for such a wonderful mercy in teaching us the truth. And I pray, Father, that you would please be pleased, Lord, to continue to stir up our minds and hearts to learn more about you. Bless the giving tonight. In Jesus' name, amen.